Okay, so today we're very happy to have Gilbert Aristeas-Salo visiting from Queen Mary in London. So he's been around this week, and he'll be here to end of the day. Gilbert does a lot of interesting work on studying binary black hole mergers and other strong field dynamics in modified gravity. So we're very happy to have you.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for the introduction and for the invitation. I will talk about the work that we have done in the context of nonlinear dynamics in modified gravity, that it, which is basically a consistent of simulations of compact objects, black holes, specifically in a certain modified theory of gravity that I will motivate it in. So I'll start with a motivation of the modified gravity modified gravity in general, the theory that we are using. Then I'll talk about our formulation, which comes also from the modified harmonic gauge, and that we proved it to be well posed. And then I will switch to the results that we have. We have obtained for several different couplings, and finally go to the summary and further directions. So, as for the motivation in the recent years, so due to the that now we are able to detect gravitational waves, this has a strong potential that we are now able to test the strong field regime, and in this strong regime. Where we do have high curvatures, this is where we can observe effects that we have not observed before. So as what we can see in this plot, now with the LIGO, LISA, and all these experiments, we can test these regimes of high curvatures that we had not explored before, and this high curvature regime is manifested mainly with the mergers of compact objects such as black holes, which are the ones I'll talk about. And in order to test this regime, so it's essential numerical relativity that enables us to compute what are the waveforms of, for example, two black holes that inspire and arrive to the merger. In this regime of high curvatures, when we are looking at the nonlinear effects, then we believe that that general relativity is not the complete theory, and in this regime is where we will observe the most the most different effects from GR. So there is like a huge family of modified gravity theory. So this is one of the several plots that have been done to describe all the different families. So the one in which we have looked at enters into the Einstein-Dilaton Gauss-Bonnet, and it's a kind of a scalar tensor theory of gravity. And why do we have chosen this? So there are like multiple possibilities for modifying gravity, and we have motivated the theory that we are studying from the effective field theory point of view. That is that if we add a scalar degree of freedom to the Einstein-Hilbert action, then we consider all the most general terms such that we go up to four derivatives in the action. So also for our simulation, we have always made sure that we are in the weak coupling regime. This means that that this correction will be will explain will be effective up to a certain curvatures. And then if these couplings were bigger, then we would have to add like the higher derivatives terms. So this is the theory that we're looking at, which is like the most, the four derivative Pascal tensor theory of gravity, which is the most general parity invariant theory of gravity with a scalar degree of freedom, such that its equations of motion are second derivative, are second order. So here we see that there is the Einstein. First, we will have the Einstein Hilbert action. Then, as I forgot that we have this. Thank you. So, here we will have the part from GR. And then if we add a scalar field with a given kinetic term and potential term, then the two most general terms coming from all the four derivative possible combinations are such that they give us a second order equation of motion are these ones, where we have here the Gauss-Monnet curvature with multiplied by a coupling to the scalar field, and then also another term multiplied to the kinetic square, which we have observed that these terms it is like a second order in a second order Horn-Desky theory, and we have said that we have seen that the most relevant is always the Gauss-Monnet curvature. And
why are you adding the x square term? So I mean, what's special about that particular term? And then
because you need this term so as to construct a theory such that is the most general theory. So when you
four derivatives.
Yes, up to four derivatives, because that's right.
Four derivatives or two derivatives?
It's four derivatives. So for example, the LGV has this R square. So this is like two derivative to the square that when you consider like partial integration, this is like having four derivatives.
But the equation of motion is two derivatives.
The equation of motion it only has two derivatives. They can be squared, but we only have two derivatives and they are second order equation of motion. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Box phi times x, isn't that another possible term?
Box phi times x.
40
bucks. Would this maintain the second order equations?
Yeah, it's linear box. But that was another.
But then it's not. I think that with some redefinition you can get rid of that term probably. And also the other relevant aspect of this theory is that black holes do violate the no-hair theorem in the sense that we have a non-trivial configuration of the scalar field for the black holes. And then this is where we observe the most deviations from GR.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Does the Gauss-Bonnet term add an additional scalar degree of freedom?
So the degree of the Gauss-Bonnet curvature has to be multiplied by a coupling of the scalar field, because if here we didn't have we would have a constant, then it would be a trivial GR because of the symmetries.
Right, but if we defy, does it get does the scalar become dynamical, the scalar in GR, in the R or not?
If phi is dynamical. So for example, if you have a single black hole, then the scalar field does reach a stationary configuration.
There are two scalar modes now, or just one? Dynamical scalars or?
We just have one scalar field, so this phi is the same that appears here. Here we only have one scalar field.
I think Klaus is asking how many dynamical degrees of freedom are there?
Ah,
total.
Yeah, so two. The the scalar field and its derivative.
In GR.
So the scalar field adds two modes to GR.
Two.
Yes.
Maybe you write it down.
Okay. So when working in numerical relativity is a key aspect of well-posedness because the in the sense that in our theory we do have like an initial value or Cauchy problem of a series of variables but that we'll have to evolve in time, and when we say that this is locally well-posed, this means that there exists a unique a solution for a given time, which depends smoothly on the initial data, and only well-posed initial value problems can lead to a stable numerical relativity solutions or simulations, and that's why it took so long in numerical relativity to be able to evolve the first binaries because the formulation that people were using was not well-posed. So for this specific modified gravity theory, the formulations that are usually used in GR were not well posed, and this is why we were not able to simulate binary black hole simulations for this theory until the modified harmonic gauge was proposed by Aaron and Harvey three years ago. So in this paper, they proposed a specific gauge which is a well-posed formulation of all the Lovelock and Horndesky theories of gravity, always in the weakly coupled regime, which is also the one in which we are interested if we motivate these theories from the effective field theory point of view. And the key aspect of this formulation is that they did introduce two additional metrics, both Lorentzian, this G tilde and G hat, such that they differ from the physical metric G mu. And so, thanks to having introduced these new Lorentzian metrics, then the modes, the unphysical modes coming from the gauge do have different propagation speeds than the physical modes, and this was the reason why this formulation is well posed, because we don't have then the degeneracies that do occur when we set these three cones to be the same. And using this modified harmonic gauge, then this was already implemented in the Einstein scalar Gauss-Bonnet in this couple of papers by Will, Justin, and Max. And this work was done in the harmonic gauge formalism. And then in numerical relativity, there is the other formulation that is used by many numerical relativity codes, which is called the moving puncture gauge. So the difference of this formalism is that it uses singularity avoidant coordinates in the sense that when we evolve a space-time singularity, such as black holes, we don't need to do excision, because with the way how the variables, how the gauge variables are defined, then the points inside the singularity, when they get evolved, they get separated from the ones outside, which is what happens in this Penrose diagram that we do have here. So if we start with a line here, then when time evolves, these points do get far away from the singularity, and so then the singularity sitting at r equal to zero is not a problem anymore. So that this is kind of a way to do excision without actually doing it. And for this simulation, the questions of motion that are usually that are used for the labs and shift, which are the two numerical relativity variables responsible for the gauge. So are these ones, the one plus log slicing and the gamma driver, and then using this new formalism, this new modified approach, where we had these g tilde and j hat metrics introduced, then these equations of motion, these equations change in this way with this a of x parameter that that is non-zero if we want to have a well-posed formulation.
And Cauchy surface on one of those lines?
Sorry?
Do you set up your Cauchy initial value on one of those lines?
Yeah, so that's how it works in general, the moving puncture approach, not the modified one. Obviously also, is that this is just to show how the points that are close to the how the points that initially are close to the singularity, and that's why they could have numerical problems, as when the time evolves, they do get far away.
But you're not doing that, you're saying you're doing it
different? No, we're doing exactly the same. Okay. So the thing is that
up there and then come down.
Yeah, so what we are doing is that so with this one plus log slicing, this is like the formulation that we use in GR. And then by using the if we are motivated with this modified harmonic gauge where we introduce these g tilde and g hat variables, then this is when we change the equations by these terms. So yeah, this is not important at all what are the form of the equation. Just wanted to mention it. Yeah.
And your d is the dimension, or
sorry,
is d the dimension of the space
time? Yes. These are the dimensions of the space time. Yeah. So the reason why it appears that here is that this is like the number that we do have, so that the shift propagates at the velocity of the light. But these simulations are always in 3+1, not two arbitrary dimensions. But for example, using d equal to 4. Is the one that we are using for the black string in 4+1. Okay, so now that we have introduced the formulation, let's go to the results. So I write here again the actions that we will have in mind. These four derivative scalar tensor theory that we have that have introduced, and then one of the main results was that we showed that for our formalism in this CCZ for moving punctured approach is well posed in the weakly coupled regime. So when the couplings here lambda and G2 are small. In comparison to the lengths or to the physical lengths of the system. And then we implemented it in its full nonlinear form in an extension of GR Chombo, which we called GR Forras. So now, just a quick motivation of what is the from where comes the name GR Forras. So we don't have like a Catalan tradition of doing human towers in which I'm quite involved, and then we named it GR Forras because when a tower is constructed And if we believe that it is gravity, then if we motivate it from a an effective field theory point of view, if we consider that up to two derivatives is GR, then the next level, which is the Fourier, is up to four derivatives, then we would have higher derivative, and so on. So, the first theory that we looked was the shift symmetric for derivative Ascart and Chaussure. That is when we consider the coupling multiplied to the Gauss-Bonnet to be a linear one. So this is sometimes called the type one coupling, in the sense that in this case, since the derivative of this coupling is always different than zero, then the only solutions that the only black hole solutions that we have are hairy, in the sense that they do have a non-trivial configuration of the scalar field. So the Kerr solutions are not the solutions for this theory. And then for this we were able to simulate binary black holes, both for initially non-spinning black hole binaries and also for initially spinning black hole binaries. And here we are plotting the strain of the gravitational wave, the tutu mode, and then we mainly saw that when we push the coupling higher, then the merger happens earlier, which is what we expected, since the scalar degrees of freedom are the ones that extract energy from the binary. And probably the red one here, this has a too high coupling, where the weak coupling condition would not hold at all. But it is just for seeing how things would behave.
So, do you know all of this kind of change in the kind of temperatures due to actually the enhanced scalar radiation, or could it also just be some kind of perturbation at the separation and phasing of the binary due to the scalarization process or something, just like a
Mainly I think that the most important aspect is like because of the scalar degree of freedom that makes the orbits come around. But it's also true that we did these simulations starting from a GR solution, which solves the constraints here. But then in the beginning there is a kick, which maybe it happens around here, probably. There's a kick due to the scalarization, which could also deviate a little bit the orbit, and that could be the effect why maybe we are seeing it that they do different a bit more than what is just produced by the scalar degree of freedom.
If you try like aligning them all at temperature or something,
if you try to?
If you like align them all at the waveforms at temperature.
The phase is quite similar.
But if you like backwards in time to where they deviate, is it like?
Yeah,
scalarization, or there's like a kind of. Like most of this change in the time of merger is kind of like a adding up.
So we saw that for example you can see it better for this plot, which this is like GR and the one which are quite a small coupling. So for this you see that it's just a change of just the merger happens before, but the form of the waves is just almost the same.
I mean, in addition to the radiative degree of freedom, there's a potential that's associated with the scalar error.
Yes.
So for the values of the coupling, we have
Yes.
What's the ratio of the strength of this one over r squared scalar force to the Cartesian force?
So the, you mean which values of the lambda coupling I'm using?
Yeah, I mean just naively, if I have two scalar charged objects,
yes,
one over r squared force. There's also the gravitational one over r squared force. So what is the strength of that force from the scalar compared to gravity? In other words, is the relevant, or is the
radiative
term relevant? How do you know?
Yeah, so here, we have only been able to do simulations where the contribution from the scalar degree of freedom is not too high, because otherwise from one point, the weak coupling condition does not hold anymore, and in the other sense, the formulation is not. At some point, the well poseness breaks down. So then in this sense, this is why the gravity scalar degree of freedom are the ones dominant ones, I would say.
Very nice. So when you start with like two far Schwarzschild plus some weak perturbativeness.
Well, actually here, since this it will be different in the next slide. But here, as we are doing this theory in which all black hole solutions are hairy, we are just starting with GR, so with zero scalar field, and then the scalar fields do automatically scalarize.
And when you say weak, you doesn't go above some value.
Weak in the sense that this lambda GV coupling, this one, it cannot be too high. Yeah? Does that answer?
I guess we are trying to see what the term that man is saying. Where would it show up in your metric, in your graphs or something? Somewhere. It should.
Just think in post-Newtonian terms. It's just there's an extra force. So there's another.
They should blow up if they become, or they become very large, right?
So the usual potential is more important closer in. The negative term is more important farther out.
Well, what does break down when we push the coupling so much is that is the scalar field. The scalar field has like a too high value. At some places, it just grows exponentially.
We should talk about it later, but I'm surprised that you get so much dephasing and still that potential contribution is small, given the fact that I would expect gravitational wave radiation to be most important in the merger.
Yeah. Well, actually, we have not measured it that much. So I was talking rather for maybe the cases where it is more similar, because as I was saying, the red one was just we just added it for completeness to say that we can evolve like this, but this probably does not reflect something which would be relevant physically.
Sorry, I missed the beginning. Do you have dipole radiation here or not?
Sorry?
Do you have dipole radiation here or not?
I think so.
Well,
yeah, they are equal mass. Ah, yeah, the equal mass. Ah, well, yeah, they're not. They're not. Yeah, that's right.
That would be
equal mass.
The next
theory that we looked at is after looking when this coupling is linear, then the next step is to look when it's quadratic, and then this is like the most general the simplest model of type 2 Einstein-Schwarzschild, meaning that It is a theory in which we do have both both Ascarized black holes and both Kerr GR black holes. So this was studied also in this couple of paper without back reactions, and then in here what we studied is the spin induced ascarization, in the sense that when we consider the lambda GB with a minus sign, then while the black holes are non-spinning, while their spin is low, they will not ascarize. But then when they do have a larger spin, which is what happens after a merger, then the change of sign of the Gauss-Bonnet curvature produces a spin-induced tachyonic instability, which causes the merger to ascarize, and that's what we studied here. So this is the plot of the expected average value of the scalar field in the horizon of the merger. So here we do have a binary black hole that have done all the spiral, and they have maintained unscalarized. And then on the merger, because of the spin, then we see that when the Gauss-Bonnet curvature is higher than a certain threshold, which depends on the mass of the black hole, then it just grows exponentially. And this is an ill-posed theory, in the sense that when after this threshold, then the scalar field grows exponentially, and it will not stop until the formulation becomes ill-posed, and then becomes not well-posed anymore, and then it breaks down. So and then the difference from the for the simulations that we did from this with respect to the other ones is that for this we had to start with an initial non-zero configuration of the scalar field, so that then at some point when we get the merger it scalarizes. Okay, so
just trying to understand that.
Oui, sorry.
Where is the instability? Is there instability there all the time, or just stability start at some value?
So the instability as this is when the merger happens at this time. And then when the merger happens at this time, then the merger has a spin which is 0.7, around 0.7, and then because of this, the Gauss-Bonnet curvature is negative, and this triggers this tachyonic instability, and that's why then the scalar field starts growing exponentially.
So why for the blue one it doesn't grow then, for the smaller lambda GB?
For the blue one, it doesn't, because the coupling of this value is not high enough.
So there is some critical value.
There is some critical value. Yes.
11 somewhere, which is the average.
Yes.
Is it the mass aspect?
Yes. So here.
Is that predicted? It seems a little bit strange to me that. There is no other master in this problem.
The effective potential comes from is like this multiplied by the RGB.
Yeah. So I don't quite understand, because the curvature always has the same sign.
That's why you need to
know. Yeah.
It's been bigger than some value, so.
Yes, But also this Gauss Bonnet curvature is not negative everywhere, just in a certain part of the space time, and that's probably why you need a certain threshold, so that the black hole does colorize.
I understand that it could be for large spins, but not a small spins. That part I understand.
Yes.
I don't understand how the magnitude of lambda GB makes a difference, because it seems that if it's unstable for one lambda GB, it would be unstable for the other, might just be a slower, maybe.
Maybe
it
shows up at later time, is that possible?
I don't think so. Well, maybe it could be that it just grows up very slowly, but I would say that.
It's just like tachyonic mass, this lambda GB just controls the magnitude of the tachyonic mass. It doesn't control the size of it. The size of it is just controlled by the spin. So I guess that's what I'm confused about.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll think about it. Yeah, but this is also the same result that was found, without back reaction, and so it has to be something that can be understood. Okay, so then in order to fix this tachyonic instability, we studied this exponential quadratic model, in which we have a coupling of this type, such that up to first order is like quadratic, but then there are like quartic and further corrections that do fix this this tachyonic instability. So here we do have as well a spin-induced scalarization, and we did a binary black hole. And here in this plot, I show the results of what happens after the merger. So after the merger, here we have the gravitational strain of what it does, of the ring down, and then in the ring down, there is the scalar field at the apparent horizon. Here I have the average value of the spin at the apparent horizon of the merger, where we saw that before, because of the quadratic behavior, then this starts growing exponential. But then, because of the further corrections that we have, then at some point it just reaches a stationary value. And so this scalarization of the scalar field coincides with where we saw this burst of radiation in the scalar mode. And then it's also where we observe that the spin of the merger does have a small drop. And also where the Kretschmann scalar does deviate the most from the Gauss-Bonnet curvature.
So how sensitive is this to the initial scalar field?
It's not that sensitive. So in this case, since we have evolved all the inspiral, and in the inspiral the scalar field is zero. So then we do start with like a small perturbation of the scalar field, and then initially it just gets reduced a lot, and then. And then at the merger, this is where it scalarizes. But it starts from 10 to the minus 10 or some value, which is quite low. So for this, I would say that it doesn't matter at all. What do you mean the time?
So the merger happens here, and then it just
automatically starts growing in an exponential form, which is like initially slowly, but then it just goes up this way.
Okay. Like if you started with a lower scalar field value, then it would take more intervals to go to saturation.
So it probably would change. So if we start, it probably would change the beginning of the simulation, which is the phase in which it totally does, in which it discovers.
Yeah, I just meant like if you start with a lower value, then you have to wait longer after the merger for it to grow to its saturation, right?
Probably.
So I guess probably. Order of magnitude like people need that.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Good. So I have a couple of videos in which we see what the scalar feels. This shouldn't happen. In my laptop it does not happen. So here we observe like the spiral of two black holes that are initially non-spinning, and so here there is no scalar field at all, and then the merger gets formed, and then this is where the scalar field just grows, and then it gets to a stable point. I don't know why this. Just get this, and then and this is what happens in the merger. So in a plane that is like where the rotation happens, and in the other which is orthogonal to this, and we see that the configuration of the scalar field has like this mushroom shape center located at the north pole. Okay, so now that I have already mentioned all the results that we have in the binary black hole. So talk a bit about some other work that we have done. So first we looked at what the hypervelocity loss looks like when we have the couplings to this Gauss-Bonnet contribution being too high. So for this, we do have that some of the physical modes lie on the null of an effective metric, and then we analyze what is the determinant of this effective metric, and we saw that for a rotating black hole with this exponential quadratic coupling, then the moment where the simulation breaks down coincides with this effective metric being negative. And here it's plotted like this. This is like a factor which is proportional to the determinant of the effective metric. And we saw that if we show different slots of time from the black hole itself, where this represents the apparent horizon. So the black zone represents where the effective metric is negative. And so we saw that mainly when we get close to the point where it breaks down, then there is like a zone which starts being inside the horizon and then just propagates outside.
Sorry, the label of the first one is wrong?
Yeah, it's wrong. It should be 49, sorry. So basically this change of determinant, like determines the transition from a hyperbolic to the elliptic system, and that we saw that for different values of the coupling, it can be either it can be a Keldysh type of hypervelocity loss or the other one.
Have you evaluated the crash
one? No, actually we haven't.
What's the size of the correction close to
calculations is made.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. Yeah. But, yes. So. Yeah. It probably is quite big, but yeah, we haven't quantized it. So we just saw that the determinant is negative, and that's why the modes become imaginary. And then. Okay. Yeah, then the other project in which we are currently working is to evolve non-equal bus binaries. So these are sometimes a bit quite tricky, since in comparison to the equal mass. But here we have been able to evolve also non-equal mass binaries for the shift symmetric, for the linear coupling of the Gauss-Bonnet, and for both the ratios 1-2 and 1-3. And here we observe some of the results. So here we do have the strain of the binary. And then here we have the zero-zero mode of the scalar field, seeing that the scalar field at the beginning just scalarizes, and then up to the merger where it adopts it has a lower value because the mass is higher, of the mass of the black hole rather than the mass of the single black holes. And this has also an issue that is what we are trying to solve now, is that because of the this I also mentioned it briefly before, that is that because of this scalarization that gets produced initially, we might have like a kick in the 2-2 mode of the scalar field that could also affect the orbit of the spiral to be affected, and that's why the next step in this project is to use our initial condition solver to start already with an initial configuration of the scalar field that is roughly it's a stationary value, so that then we can get rid of this. Of this initial kick and be able to compare better between GR and not GR.
Have you tried just ramping off the coupling?
That would be a good idea. We haven't tried it. Yeah. Well, Would it be a violate the constraints?
Yeah, I think so.
That's right. But that would be a solution for not having a smaller kick. Just to mention that, yeah, because we have done like this project in the inverse order, is that because first we had like this the code in order to run the nonlinear full evolutions, and then quite recently we had the initial condition solver that is inspired in this CTTK method by Josu, Katie, and Eugene, and. For this, we were recently able to also include the Gauss-Bonnet contribution and be able to obtain like configurations with all the satisfying the constraints of the scalar field. Here we have an example of a binary black hole and this of a single black hole with the configuration of the scalar field. And let me sum up a bit. So I have shown that we have been able to obtain a well-posed formulation in this singularity avoiding coordinates or moving punctures of the four derivative scalar tensor theory, and we have been able to evolve equal and non-equal mass binary simulations in the nonlinear regime, which has enabled us to find some non-trivial dynamics for the scalar field that happened during the inspiral or during the merger. And as for the further direction that we want to go using this formulation, on the one hand, we are now working in order to introduce hydrodynamics and also use our formulation, our simulation to be able to evolve neutron stars with for simulating a binary black hole neutron stars or two neutron stars. Then on the other hand, we are also applying inhomogeneous inflation. We're also applying this formulation in cosmological space-times, trying to simulate inhomogeneous inflation driven by an inflaton, which is as well coupled to this Gauss-Monnet curvature. And then finally, we are also looking at the black strings that happen in several in Lovelock theories of five dimensions and 4+1. And yeah, that's all. Thank you for your attention.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
So, what are you interested in looking in the
bi-dimensional
black strings?
Yes. So, mainly in the Gregorian Laflamme instability to see how it changes with respect to the GRK. So, this is a follow up of the paper by Pau and Tiago. Of this black string in 4+1, and then when we are not in 3+1 dimension, then the Gauss-Monnet term is like non-trivial without its coupling to the scalar field, and also the formulation we also proved that up to a weak coupling regime, it's well posed in the.
If you're going to have the instability and you get to kind of a shrinking like this,
yes,
you're going to end up in the regime where you're now growing short wavelengths, and so likely you're going to get out of the good regime, right? So something probably will go wrong.
Yeah, could be. So we're looking at it now, but
the idea that you could add higher curvature pyramid that might affect somehow, like it would be the same, and then you go to the That smaller scale
would
kick in, and then maybe
resolve
the singularity.
Yeah, that would be the idea to see what is the change. So
I guess a mass gap somewhere because of the new scale, or when you get to that scale, everything would crap out.
Yeah, I don't know. So I have put it here because it's a project that Pau is working on with another PhD student in Queen Mary using that formulation, and I think that so far he has been able to to do only the first runs and still not seen what is the endpoint of this instability.
Are there any questions online?
These are all in the regime that the fixed force just strength is okay with the constraints from solar system or other gravitational
tests. You mean the constraints of the gravitational waves?
Well, any other test, because you do have this other scalar one, doesn't that give you additional gravitational
force, for example,
laser, density, solar system, corrections to GR or
JR? I don't know much about what this constraint would be, but so the results that we have obtained is just a proof of principles of how the configuration is. So I guess that if we have the the couplings to be too small, then these constraints might not be violated. And anyway, also the case where we have that we only get the contribution of the scalar field after the merger. So when the high curvatures influence, maybe this case is more interesting because just in the spiral phase, that is where we do have the most data. Everything is not constrained because we have just GR.
When you say cosmology, you mean that the gravitational waves
and stuff,
or you
mean? Yes. So the thing is also that maybe the regime of the frequencies when looking at the constraints from cosmology or from these gravitational wave compact objects might be different. So I'm not sure what we can say about the constraints.
Wondering
for the scalar mode,
can it be expanded in terms of cosmic models at all? In terms of? For the scalar mode, can it be decomposed into cosmic models?
We haven't looked at that, but it could be. Well. In terms of the scalar modes, it would also be interesting to see also for the gravitational strain, how much does it change. So for the gravitational strain, we tried to do something, but we saw that we don't have the enough resolution in order to quantify if the changes that we see with respect to GR are due to the modified gravity contribution. And yeah, but for the scalar radiation, it would also be interesting to see.
Yeah, but I think the spectral cosmological modes used to be far different from those of GR, right? So you could search with an interesting, right? That's what you guys will do eventually. Search with GR and think that you're getting a black hole. But with many modes, and so that might be a trigger, or the modes you get are slightly from what you would get in a clean GR case.
Yeah, and also the speed is involved. I think it's related to time as a program. GR speed, the question of modes can also be different.
Any questions?
Okay. Thank you.